Welcome, everyone, to Potholes and Politics, local Maine issues from A to Z. Today, you have two very tired hosts of this podcast waiting for the never-ending session to end. I am your host, Rebecca Graham.
And I'm Rebecca Lambert, your other host.
Hey, Lambo, how was your week?
Not bad, actually, I gotta say. This is exciting times here in advocacy and communications.
To be fresh and naive. I'm utterly exhausted. I would like them to go home, and if nothing more than to stop the damage. But there are some important bills we got hanging out there.
So we just hang in there.
That's what we got to do. So one of the things that we should talk about is adjournment date. Usually, there's a statutory adjournment date that is established at the beginning of session, which was meant to be Wednesday. However, that kind of fell out of play because they technically adjourned after they adopted the baseline budget to keep government running. So they didn't have to go with a two-thirds majority and just went with a majority budget. So now we're in a special session, which means technically that could go on forever, as it has in the past. And it certainly seems like it is now, partially because of the backlog. But needless to say, they didn't adjourn on Wednesday. They're not remotely finished their work. They've made no decisions on the supplemental. Well, they made some decisions on the supplemental budget, but they certainly don't have all of those finalized. They're still in the backroom negotiations. And they still haven't run the table as the Senate and the House keep voting out bills. There's a number of important measures that are now sitting on the table waiting for finite money, all competing, all with varying levels of impact on local government.
And one of which was supposed to be exempted from the special appropriations table, wasn't it?
I believe that was a comment that was made or an intended promise that obviously didn't happen. And that would have been the General Assistance Bill, LD 1664. That was an act to increase the reimbursements for municipalities from state government for their mandated general assistance activities, from what is currently 70% functionally, because admin services are not included in that reimbursement. Because evidently, you're supposed to provide all these things without any admin. And it would increase that to 90%. So there would be at least a burden shift for a lot of issues that municipalities are facing that they can't stop, like housing and increased costs of everything that are putting some people in some pretty precarious situations. And then they qualify for general assistance funding, which is paid for by property tax, all that the state doesn't reimburse. So for some communities like Portland, that's a significant amount of money, which translates into a significant amount of local property tax that then needs to be assessed to the tune of sometimes like 12-15%, I think I read in one article.
And punctuates the sentiment that one size does not fit all.
Oh, no. Does it? Gee, I thought all towns were the same, all had the same resources. Yeah, there seems to be a lot of lack of conversations and just general willingness to have conversations with people who might hold additional material to inform an ideological position. I guess that would be the polite way to put it.
Why be polite? Hasn't that gone out the window now?
Yeah, it certainly has. This is unlike any atmosphere. I mean, generally the end of session is always chaotic and tempers are always short, but now the only communication seems to be happening on the floor and in public. They're certainly not talking behind scenes, it sounds like, from a lot of the reports. And what gets said seems to be not very kind, I guess, is what you could say. But it's coming from both sides.
Right.
And we've heard rumors that there are members that are saying that any municipal official opposition to functional policy is simply because they're lazy or they're lying, which has been problematic.
Or money hungry.
Money hungry,
don't forget
yes.
That.
All those darn unpaid volunteers.
I know.
Just money grabbing. Yeah. And interestingly, you know, there's a number of communities that have been really working hard despite not having the resources that the state had promised to have in place to try to get a lot of the new ordinances for ADUs and affordable housing over the line. And ironically, their residents have rejected them. Most recently, I guess, in Ogunquit, also in Boothbay Harbor. So
I was just going to say, I just read an article from Boothbay Harbor.
Yeah. Which begs the question, you know, you've mandated these municipal officials do this work, and their community is saying, no, we don't want the work that you're presenting to us. So who is driving this policy? Who are they listening to? If they're not listening to municipal officials about trying to make it functional so that they had time to try to create buy-in and alleviate fears that would inevitably come from rushed through policy for those residents, they clearly aren't listening to the residents either.
Right. So, I mean, what do you do in that situation? You pass a law, the legislature passes a law, but the citizens refuse to adopt it.
Yeah, municipal officials do their work, and the citizens are like, no, because they haven't created that space for buy-in. I mean, local conversations always generally produce a lot of really innovative policy when you have the community behind it. And that is where a lot of the service delivery is happening in really unique ways. And what I've heard most recently is that's true globally. A lot of deviations away from market-based forces are being intercepted at the local level through citizen bought in, citizen legislative and parliamentary assemblies that are saying, this is what we want in our communities. We saw that with plastic bags. Mm-hmm. We see that with short-term rental pressures. It's the local communities that are finding ways to solve that on an individual basis. And not until they start doing that in a variety, or at least like 400 different ways, does the legislature finally say, oh, maybe this is a problem and we should take some action. Except it was the inverse in this case, even though municipalities have been dealing with ways in which they can change local policy to planning policy to promote the types of communities that they want, aging in place, walkable communities. And a lot of times it seems to be those programs that they have to apply to get that support that are sometimes hangups. Yeah, so conversations in the State House are more heated, more bullying on both sides than I think we've ever seen.
There's a lot of backhanded comments, floor speeches lately.
Yeah. These are conversations I wish were happening publicly, because you know they're happening in all of those corner caucus sessions.
Right.
They're talking about their strategy on bills and
to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I don't think you'd want to. Not in that sausage making way at all. I think you'd be irritated. So we've got a bunch of bills that are sitting on the appropriations table. Which is probably the biggest and widest known closed door process that there is. The Appropriations Committee works out what they're going to vote on unanimously behind closed doors, comes out, votes on those lines, and then goes back behind closed doors and hammers it out. So they're doing that right now with the supplemental budget, doing line by line. So they haven't touched the appropriations table, which are bills that have been passed through both the House and Senate that have some need for a fiscal note and appropriations. And of course, there are a significant number of those that intersect with municipal costs or municipal operation. And there's a big one out there for county jail funding. County facilities are trying to get their shortfalls covered by the increase. Whoa. So that email from Kate kind of goes into what we're talking about. Evidently, the Senate is not coming back in until the House has their stuff in line.
Wow.
Yeah. So
they just ordered the House out, too, until 9. And that the House adjourn until 9 on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The House concurring that when the House and Senate adjourn, the Senate adjourn until the call of the President of the Senate when there is a need to conduct legislative business. So the lack of communication also extends between the two bodies. There's been a number of back and forths on a lot of those bills as well, with the Senate not concurring and insisting.
Does that mean that the bill is dead?
It can. I mean, it can mean that the bill dies in between the bodies. It can mean that it dies on the unfinished business table if they adjourn without taking up that business. It can also result into what we've seen on a couple of bills, the Committee of Conference, in which the both bodies have a select number of individuals that try to hammer out something that they can both agree to. We did receive notice yesterday that the Day Academy bill did not achieve any sort of consensus between the two bodies, so it's dead, officially dead. There was a, though the Senate was insisting and asked for the Committee of Conference so that they could find a path forward, because there's a very clear need, particularly in Southern Maine, for there to be an alternative. They could fill a single academy place alone, probably just one department, let alone the number of departments that are hiring down there. So
it just baffles me that there's no reason to stop this from happening. There's such a need for law enforcement personnel and emergency medical workers and firemen, and it just it's baffling to me that there can't be some kind of consensus for those essential positions.
Yeah, and I think probably what I find most problematic about it is that it comes down to resources, and the academy doesn't have current resources in order to do that. But there are ways in which municipalities, as they always do, step up to backfill that void. There are creative ways in which that could be approached, and it could be everything from assigning somebody to assist.
Right. It could be talked about.
Yes. Yeah. So there just hasn't been a willingness to do that. There's not a willingness to add position counts. They're in the middle of a review now, so I think they're going to be thinking about that as they go forward. But there's also other state partners that could be involved in, like our university system,
right,
or our community college system, that are willing and able to step up. And those folks aren't even in the conversation yet. But there's a number of solutions, and there's not a lot of time for those finite resources to be able to dig in, and arguably will in some cases. One thing I think that we can all agree on is that inflation has affected all parts of government.
For sure.
So the county jail funding increased request bill is kind of important, because county jails can't control the flux of folks that come in there. And
what?
I know.
they
don't get to
crime?
Pick and choose. Like, yeah. They don't get to pick and choose who gets to decide. Healthcare costs, staffing costs are off the charts. And just finding folks to fill those roles has been a struggle as well. But they also haven't asked for any increase that is out of line with inflation. Inflation that the DOC recognized and built into their budget but didn't give the county jails. And right now, 80% of property tax is what funds county jails, and we're asking the state for 20%. They will be contributing less than that if that doesn't get funded over the next biennium. So that's going to be more than the property taxpayers, who have nothing to do with who gets assigned to those facilities or control over them, will have to shoulder. No control at all. But there's that. There is the length of service award for firefighters that would provide kind of a retirement system. LOSAP is what we call it. That is still sitting on the appropriations table. It was something that the governor had spoke to during her inauguration speech, that she intended to make that part of her budget and to fund that, because she recognized, particularly after what happened in Farmington, how important that was. And it didn't end up in her budget. So now it's sitting on the appropriations table. There's also training facilities that are needed, and are needed to be not only built, but the ones that exist need reboot. And they do that because one of the ways of that firefighters receive training used to be when you were demolishing a house or you needed to get rid of a house, that would be used
burn
as a structure fire.
Controlled burn.
Yeah, a controlled burn. That would be a training opportunity for folks who had not been to a fully engulfed structure fire, which can be, you know, extremely dangerous, but also extremely shocking. It's really shocking once you see a building go up in flames in that way, and it takes on a life of its own. So that training is vital to
and
prepare
you need to
folks.
Run towards it.
Yeah, yeah. And stuff is happening. But because of environmental concerns, both from the foam that is used in suppression, fire suppression, but also the materials that are found in houses, you know, DEP doesn't want that happening anymore, so they can't do that. So in order to train you are literally other trial by fire when you go to your first structure fire with zero experience in a training setting. If we don't have those adequate training facilities, that might be it. And that, you know, is also concerning for the folks that are responding if they have a bunch of folks that have never experienced those kind of things coming in behind them. I mean, it's a hell of a time to be training.
Right, right. So I guess you could kind of compare that to going off to war, though.
Yeah, but you know what? They prepare you for that. You go through basic training. You go through your special job.
Were you in the military? What you're doing.
No. No, just married them. So the other bills, we've got the GA bill. We've got the county jail funding that's sitting on it's kind of sitting on the biennium, hoping to get into the biennium, but might need to be on the table. We had LOSAP. We have the training facilities. We have our own TIF bill because the department needs to add staff to rubber stamp how a community chooses to spend its local retained value on its local projects specific to housing and retaining and keeping housing in multi-family housing in good nick and affordable. So that's quite ironic, but that's on the table. And then, of course, we have our public safety health and wellness bill, LD 1857, that's also on the table, which could be solved by our bill that is sitting on the unfinished business table had they chosen to carve out either for municipalities or, in general, funded that from cannabis revenue instead of the $2 million appropriation that they gave it one time. So your LD 88.
It's still hanging out there. It's probably going to die right where it is.
It's sitting on the unfinished business table. Yeah, there's also LD 1443, which we were alerted to, which is the school board recall.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that came out with a majority ought not to pass report. Recognizing that local school boards deal with local issues and local schools and communities have the ability to determine their recall process locally.
And if I can just add on that, is school boards is such a unique board to sit on, and you're dealing with people's kids, and people are super passionate about their children and how they parent them, and being able to recall a school board member, it just for any reason at all, just opens that door for bad behavior. And right, wrong, or different, I mean, I'm passionate about my kids, but there are some people that cross that line. And it's when you're sitting on a school board, you have to do what's right for all of the kids in that district, not just the one that comes to the meeting. It's tough.
Or your kids, yeah.
Yeah.
So many really parents, tough. There's so many parents go on school board the length of time that their kids are in the school.
Yeah. Right. Or they go on thinking they can change, you know, make changes. I'm gonna get on the school board so I can change that policy. And that's not how it is.
No,
you gotta put your ego aside.
Well, and there's not like, you know, like a normal committee. It's not a committee of one.
Right. Right.
It is a committee of consensus and a number of individuals that are involved. But, you know, municipalities can shape how they want that process for recall to go. Ironically, there isn't a recall process for any other elected official except at the local level. So that's interesting. I mean,
yeah. And if they don't like who's been elected, they can always elect somebody else. And then that next cycle, that's why there's those term limits.
Yes. Yes. But there, you know, if we could get rid of every elected official that we didn't like and wasn't advancing the right policy, we would probably never have a legislature.
Right. Or they'd change so often.
Right. Well, there's a worrying trend, too, that a lot of school boards are being attacked or influenced from outside the community forces, which is ridiculous. You know, this.
Yeah. I feel like it is. I mean, I'm in my fifth year, I think, on the school board, and there's nobody trying to influence anything except for the people in the district.
Yeah.
But no, as a rule of thumb, I try to listen to, because my background's not in the educational field, so I'm trying to learn what it is that they actually do at the same time as I'm making policy decisions. And that's like from anyone. You don't have to, there's no requirement to have an educational background. But that by no means means that I'm uneducated.
No. Well, there's no IQ to run for the legislature either. That's what citizen review boards are meant to be. They're meant to be people that have a varying level of expertise and understanding so that they ask questions that people haven't thought about and clarify.
And I would hope that they would just be engaged with their community and just want to be a part of it and make it the best community that it can be, because you got to live there.
Yeah, I would bet that the teachers probably would love parents to be as involved with their students' education and engaging with them as they seem to be with school boards.
Yeah, that 1443 bill also highlights another worrying trend that I've seen this year that I think is just so disrespectful to the committee process. I think we've talked about that before, because the committee process was always this place where you reached consensus, you listened to folks, and you worked in a bipartisan way. But the majority report is not what's getting advanced. It's a minority report that had two members on it that is getting advanced. And that one would preempt any local community's recall process for school board officials that had been established or is being worked on right now, because there are a number of communities that are seeing that that's problematic, mm-hmm. like the open one. And it can swing both ways. So if someone doesn't like you because you stand for something that is seen as a liberal idea, then they can also say they don't like you on that board because you stand for a religious idea that they don't like.
And right.
So that has danger both ways. And I think a lot of communities have already started that process, engaged with their local communities to say, what is it? How do we want to approach when we're going to recall an elected official?
Mm-hmm.
So the advancing of minority reports has been happening more and more and more.
Yeah. And it seems like, at just if you think about it from, you know, the 10,000-foot level, it would seem that, like, if it was voted out of committee with a divided report, it would seem like the majority one would be the one that would have to be advanced, because that was the majority.
Well, so the majority report should be the one that's advanced, and then live or die based upon that majority principle. I mean, I guess that would be primary if you're going to introduce that report.
Mm.
Particularly when the majority is, or the minority is only two members. But at the same time, the minority reports serve as alternate paths. So they deserve to have that conversation and also be advanced when they have multiple minority reports, as we've heard with a couple of our bills.
Right.
Depending upon how the chair feels about that,
right,
they will advance it or not. It'll either be my way or the highway, because that's
classic
consensus.
Bully.
Consensus building. And it whiplashes. It whiplashes back. So we've got 101 and 130. It's a senior tax property stabilization bill. And that is awaiting a first vote. Both of those are. LD 101 is the way in which we dispose of property for unpaid taxes, and in line with the new Supreme Court ruling on that. So it's looking at our process and making sure it aligns. Both of those just got reported out. I think one's in the House, one's in the Senate, and will be on the calendar should they ever decide to meet again. So there's a lot of unfinished work.
There is.
Yeah. And they were
so
supposed
the
to
thought was there's one of a couple things that could happen. They could either adjourn today, which clearly is not going to happen. And then there was another thought that they could finish today and then come back to finish up the budget or something in September.
I guess technically they could not come back. They could leave today, leave everything where it is in stasis, and then come back. Let appropriations do its work over July and August, behind closed doors, come back and vote, and then finish stuff, maybe negotiate, maybe taking a step back, breathing, and thinking about it, maybe even going back to their communities and consulting their constituents on how they feel about those proposals and any of those unintended consequences.
I think the last rumor that we heard was that they were planning to adjourn on the 30th, or at least recess on the 30th, and then come back in September and finish their work. Certainly feels like we're not getting done this week. Anyway, I think that it would be really great for us to call out all of that behavior and say it's really not okay. These institutions exist. They're as flawed as the humans that are in them, and we need to work to make it better,
right,
collectively, not make violence or anything violent
work
towards them
intentions.
Or dismantling them as the goal. Yeah. If we could just all operate on the assumption that we're coming at service to our citizens from a place of desire to serve those citizens,
mm-hmm,
and accept that as the baseline.
Our friends, our family, our neighbors.
Yeah. So we got, I think that's about it. We're both tired. We're all tired. We're all exhausted. We're all eager for vacation. We are doing some heavy travel when we come back from vacation, though.
Yes. Yes. July is a month of travel.
July is going to be another month of travel. We're going to take the podcast on the road a little bit.
Yes. It's going to be in conjunction with the series that will be featured in the Maine Town and City, which would be Where in Maine, where we're going to feature kind of the fun side of towns. We're going to pick one town from each county. The first one I'm doing is Wayne, Maine. That's going to come out in July.
Wayne's World. Wayne's World.
Well, the only thing, my criteria for this month, since we still have legislative stuff going on, was it had to be close to my house. And something that I could get done before vacation. So I was like, oh
dear Lord.
And the only thing that kept circling in my head was, where in the hell is Wayne, Maine? You know those shirts that you can get at the general store?
No.
Where in the hell is Wayne, Maine?
No, I haven't been to the general store in a long time.
So
once upon a time, lived in Mount Vernon. But
oh, did you?
Yeah.
But then you and I were headed off in the middle of July to Saint Agathe.
Woohoo! Can't wait.
Yeah.
Girl.
So we're going to be there on the 19th and 20th. And so
I'm hoping we can hook up with all of our peeps.
Yeah. If anyone's listening from that area, we'll be up there.
County administrator or town manager that might be in the Saint Agathe area.
Wants to meet us for a cocktail or
and
something.
Some poutine.
We'll have a blast.
Yes, I can't wait for that. That's going to be fun. Oh, the other place that we're going is Boston for the National League of Cities.
Yes.
Conference, staff conference that happens every year. Last year was New Orleans, which was a good time. But we're going to be in Boston this year. And one of the things that I think we keep seeing on the legislative level that the topics that they're going to cover is something that's happening on the national level and it's worth paying attention to, which is why I like going to that conference, because you're finding out what's happening, who's behind a lot of these national initiatives, whether it's the Cato Institute on ADU funding or NRA on right to food. You find out the background.
You do.
So it's about preemption of local authority, and there is a widespread national politic that's moving more towards state rights and this really silent movement that is trying to narrow and eliminate local government autonomy, which is really concerning, because I think there's a lot of power in having this, our citizens, which is closest to government, really push forward their ideas and make them functional in the local government context, because that's the playground before it gets to the state level and is where all the innovation is happening within social policy. So,
and Maine usually follows suit with the rest of the country, so it's kind of nice to get the skinny of what's coming down.
Yeah, when we go to the annual New England Leagues conference, I love doing that because I love talking to our counterparts in our other states. They're often envious at our home rule because they know that they know the power in it, and the costs of not having it are significant and are borne by them in some pretty extreme ways, making, you know, everything that they do unaffordable. That's always fascinating and makes me appreciate being Maine a lot more. And it's worth paying attention when folks are concerned about town meeting and thinking that that is somehow undemocratic, when it is like the most raw democracy that there is. Yep. It is the purest form. We're operating with extremes. It just disengages the middle. Mm-hmm. It really disengages where the majority of us live, which is
everything in moderation.
Absolutely. Now that they have adjourned for the day,
does that mean we can caucus?
I think we should do a corner caucus around Petra Beer.
Yeah, I
it's
agree.
A sunny day, and we're getting giant completely pretzel. Weather screwed for the entire weekend.
Mm-hmm.
This is it.
So I'm really just glad that there's nice weather.
Well, this is it.
Yeah, but there's no boots in, like, winter storms. That's what I'm referencing. Although my husband did say to me that today or yesterday, I think it was the 21st, was the longest day of the year. So they're only going to get shorter now. I was like, you're such a downer.
No, it's totally true.
Well, right. There we are then.
There we are then.
This was good. It's been a while.
It has been a
while.
Busy
and it's hasn't worked out, but
yeah,
I'm looking forward to the summer and doing some fun topics. Maybe getting a legislator or two to come on the podcast and talk about their experience.
Yeah, I think it would be worth talking about how to reboot a municipal caucus with some of the members that are really trying to moderate and struggling against the strong paradigms that are there, who are extremely good-hearted and well-intentioned and really care about functional policy and care about really good policy.
All right.
All right.
Fantastic.
All right, I'll catch you later. Have a great weekend.
You as well.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.